Here, I didn't get a mic. Hold on one moment. Hello, I greet you all in the name of our Lord Jesus this morning. Why don't we rise to our feet for prayer before God? And those that are able, why don't we lift up holy hands? Father, we just praise your name. We thank you for this day. We thank you for your goodness to us. Lord, we just desire to be faithful to you in the midst of this evil and drifting and changing days. Lord, we just desire to be steadfast in our faith and to hold fast to the things that we've learned. We just pray that you would help me as I endeavor to speak your words this morning. And Lord, just pray that Lord, every heart would have a heart to hear and obey, and Lord, just to follow you. We just pray, Lord, that all the words could be spoken clearly, they'd be understood well. And most of all, would your Spirit be among us, working and guiding. Lord, may we be a people that are filled with love, filled with mercy and compassion, and reflecting our Lord Jesus, righteousness and truth. Just guide us, we pray, in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen. You know, I've shared with many of you different things that I learned there, and my brother asked me to share on things that I learned from those that I ministered to there in Turkey. I guess you could make a title of this. Brother Abner helped me with a title. The things that I've learned from those that I've taught. And Brother Abner's really good at titles, so I asked him if he's got an idea. And I had many options. There were a lot of things that I learned there. You know, I feel like because of the breakdown of culture in our land, we don't realize the amount of values that got broke down during that time. And just, you know, being there caused me to think a lot about the way I heard from my parents how it used to be in the South. Maybe things that many of you have heard. You know, many times when things get broke down because we think it's not necessary, or just maybe individualism takes on, maybe training doesn't happen, so therefore values don't get passed on, and these things just kind of fall by the wayside, we don't realize the principles that are actually being lost. And some of the principles might have just been built upon, community values that kind of developed through time. Certain people had certain ideas that they thought would be good for a certain community, but many of the values were built upon biblical principles that people build upon by wrestling with trying to apply scriptures that sometimes now may look vague to us. Many aspects of their culture, I would say, go all the way back to Father Abraham. Whether it's exactly that way or not, I would say that there's many that, of the traditions that they still operate by, the things that they still do, have been things that have been passed down the ages. And in this generation, like in most places, we see that they're starting to get eroded, they're starting to be lost out in a lot of ways, but yet they're still very strong in the culture. And You know, there was just many things that I thought. I won't go down a long list. But as you might can thought, I thought one of the biggest principles, one of the biggest aspects that we learned there, and many of you have heard me talk about many times, that embodies so many of their values is hospitality. And, you know, I thought if I share on many different subjects, I'm going to kind of say things that don't really give bones to what I'm trying to say. Something that will actually affect us, that could actually, make some applications in our lives. So I decided to try to narrow it down to hospitality and respect for elders, if I have time to do this. I want to share a story. When I first came, whenever the earthquake happened, we were trying to figure out what to do, and we were driving around trying to get fuel for our vehicle, and do we go back to our home, do we not? We were talking about different things. It was my family, Brother Claire's family, and single sisters in the vehicle together, and we were trying to figure out what to do. And just driving around a city that 2 to 3 million people, everybody's outside. Everybody that has a vehicle is in their vehicle. People that aren't are trying to take refuge different ways. It was a cold day, snowy. Brother Claire's wife was expecting at that time, and he thought he wanted to be somewhere that a hospital was available. There, the hospitals were not operating those days, and if there was one that would have had the doors open, it would be packed as far as, you know, there were many people that needed looking after, so they were shipping them to other cities. So he thought we should just go somewhere else, settle and reevaluate. I didn't know. I kind of thought maybe we should just stay around, try to find some place there, be there to be ready to minister to the people. And so we were talking about, you know, the options back and forth. We decided if we could find a place, fill up our tank, if they filled up our tank, then we'll go find another city. We went around. Before long, we thought it's not going to happen. At the very end, we're in a neighborhood that many of you have gone to called Tashaja. We were there, and we had gone to that gas station before that day, but their system was down. It wasn't working. So then we decided to get it filled up. So it didn't work. We drove off, tried to find something else, drove out to the villages. Everywhere was just packed. So we finally came back through that same area. That gas station was up and running then. Every other place had no fuel. We had a diesel van. Every other place we come up, no fuel, no diesel. Then we came to this place, and we inched in there slowly, and then it had they brought us in, said, "What do you want?" You know, they're in a hurry, it's packed. I said, "Well, do you have diesel?" "Yes." "What do you want? Tell me how much." I said, "Well, can you fill it up? Do you want it full?" "Yes." "Okay," so he filled it, you know, he filled it up. And so we took that as a sign, started to leave, eventually made our way out to Mardin, talking about what to do. The next morning, we had the thought that maybe there in Mardin we could gather some goods, take it back to the city, leave our families there. Brother Claire stayed there with the others, and then me and the several single sisters drove back, met the others that were still there, the young brothers, Haji's family, and some of that. Well, during that time, we stayed in a family's home. You know, this family's home, you know, they're not completely poor, but, you know, they live month to month. You know, it's not that they have, or week to week, it's not that they have a bunch of extra. We did help them out while we were there. Haji's family stayed there. All of us stayed there. They had several guests in and out during that time. They didn't live in a big apartment. They had a two-story, I mean, they just had one story, but they were in a two-story building that was connected with others. And they served us that whole week. And, you know, I remember waking up early in the morning. Some mornings we were gone very early to go get bread. when the bread situation kind of leveled out, you know, I'd wake up maybe 6, and it was cold those days. I'd see the wife come in quietly and get the stove ready early in the morning while everybody else was sleeping. And, you know, they made long, you know, we had our sofa out on the floor, not the table, but the cloth, the place that we ate. And it was packed every morning, 20 plus people around there. And we ate, they fed us, and every meal was fresh. You know, they don't eat many leftovers there. Typically, they make what you eat, and then they find ways to eat the food. They give it to people if there's some left over. They may eat some left over, but they don't do a whole lot of that. The meals were fresh, and they did that day in and day out. They allowed us to set up our little soup kitchen there. We cooked a lot of soup during that time and delivered it to people. We used their house for a lot of preparation for things that we did to help people during that time. And there was not at all a sense of complaining, problems. They were more than happy to do it. And when we left, they were begging us to stay longer. They were no, it's no problem. You can stay longer. I'll say, well, my family's come back. We can go back to our place. You know, well, your building might fall. It's dangerous. Stay with us. Stay with us. And they were just begging us to stay more. And no doubt they were probably tired. They were giving a lot. But, you know, I realized during that time, and I'd realized that these people do a lot of sacrifice, but I realized during that time that it was real. It was not just something that they did every so often or something that they did to us Americans to try to get something from us. That it was real. That this is sacrifice they made day in and day out. Their schedule didn't matter. Their life didn't matter. What they wanted to do didn't matter. Whether they were going to have enough money tomorrow or not didn't matter. Right now, they could take care of, you know, they didn't have a car. They didn't have a home. This was a rental home. But they were tremendously hospitable to us who have more possible funds coming in than we know what to do with there. And he would say a lot, not just that time, but, you know, we know these people very well. They're actually very active in coming to our gatherings still. He said, You know, we need to be brothers with one another. We need to love each other. We need to love all people. We do not need to be enemies with each other. He would talk about that a lot. And a lot of them say things like that because they want to try to maybe soften you up to accepting their message, you know. But he was very serious about that. And I saw him do that to many people. And the biggest touching thing that happened that whenever we were getting ready to have to leave, when we got word that we need to leave Turkey, I thought about this and it brought tears to my eyes, that after that time, a little bit later, we had some guests come from England, John Petrie's and somebody from England, there to visit us, spend some time with us, they had some things to do among us. I asked them if they'd be willing to have all of us over for the evening to give them an authentic seared meal. You know, we'll give you some money so you can buy the food to prepare it. And, you know, and they, of course, they were like, yeah, no problem. And I just told them, I don't want it to be a bother. Seriously, if you're busy or if there's a problem, let me know. And she looked at me and said, don't think that. Just don't think that. And I remember she said about 3 times, don't think that. And she was dead serious. And I just, that touched me so much. I was just so blessed. I think of how often people have so much more, could have so many more less worries, so many more less cares, do not dare to lift a finger compared to what they do. And you know, a lot of that comes from training. A lot of that comes from intentional guiding. A lot of that comes from the examples they saw when they were a child, when a guest came into their village there in Syria. You know, and these were people, like I said, they were Syrian. They were kicked out of there, or they left, they fled everything. They didn't have much. when they came there. They weren't in their homeland, but they were like that to everyone they met, as far as I could see. You know, as far as practically when I say that. My wife was thinking, I think she said she remembered at least 65 homes that she pictured in her mind. She pictured the homes and she's kind of counted. We're there for 5 years, and that's just the ones that she remembered being in. And many of those 65 homes we were in multiple times. And there were many that she couldn't remember. There were many that she wasn't able to go that night. And that's not include. That's just including the homes that we had meals in. That's not including the homes that we went and drank tea in, spent time in, you know, day in and day out, in between anywhere from 3 to 10 homes a day. And it was just a way of functioning there. You'd go to businesses. If it was a small business, the shop owner, he had customers. He didn't do it with every customer. But if there's somebody special, somebody that's a foreigner that came out of the country, or a close friend that comes by his shop, he's going to call them in. He's got tea ready. He's going to do what it takes to care for this person. It's his duty before God, is the way that they view it. They view that God brought this person before you. If he leaves you unsatisfied, it's going to be against you on judgment. That is the way they view it. And we could say, well, you know, that's bad that they operate out of fear like that. That's just not good. But you know, it's amazing how they also enjoy it a lot. And they really like it. And it's not only that perspective. Yes, that is a motivating factor, but that's not the only motivating factor. You know, many times when we were first there, we would come up, you know, we didn't know much Turkish, and we'd ask people. We didn't have smartphones, and, you know, we couldn't just figure out where everything was at, so we had to talk to people. You know, so we, with our stumbling Turkish, maybe before I'd go, I'd look up the words that I need to do, and I'd, you know, try to ask, where's a modern goes, you know, where's a woodworker? You know, I want to get something made or see if I can get a board cut or something. So I'd have this word and ask them, you know, this modern goes net today, you know, where's the modern goes? And then they many times would grab me by the arm, they'd lock their arm in mine, and then they'd go and, you know, they'd close their shop and they'd take me and they'd show me. They'd take the time to show me. Oh, I'm sorry. Forgive me. So, and then they would not just say, you know, oh, it's down there, you take a right. Now, they would do that sometimes. I'm not saying they would never do that. But many times, they made sure you were taken care of, as the Good Samaritan did. He grabbed that man up. He put him on his donkey. He took him to the inn. He, you know, put oil on him, cared for him, bandaged him up, took him to the inn, made sure he had a nice place to stay, and said, when I turn back, if there's any more charges to him, charge him to my account, I'll take care of him. He made sure that man was taken care of. It wasn't just like, well, I'm busy. Yeah, you know, down the road there, if you go do that. And these people, I mean, they were busy. They have to make money. The economy's not good there. Life is expensive. You know, but many of these people, they would take intentional time, grab you by the arm, and take 10 minutes or whatever, show you, make sure everything's good, communicate with the man, tell him, you know, this is my guest, he's from America, he's a foreigner, you take good care of him. And they'd say all that, and then make sure you're taken care of. And then he'd go back to his duties. And so hospitality was not just something they did Friday evening in their home. What I'm trying to say is, I'm trying to show a picture that hospitality is a way that they view life. You look to how to benefit people. That is just a way that they looked at life. They knew how to weep with those that weep. They knew how to rejoice with those that rejoice. There's many principles that I thought. Many times, somebody might be visiting someone. I couldn't go because maybe little Patience was sick. It wasn't long. I'd get a call from somebody. Hey, I heard Patience is sick. May it pass. I'm sorry. Lord bless you.
we just hope that God give you strength while you're there taking care of your baby. And, you know, and they were communicative about that. And some of you do a lot better than I do with things like that. Some of you have convicted me in your care and concern for those kind of things. But they were very intentional about thinking, how will this affect other people? They're very intentional about that. There's many things that they were not perfect in. There are many things that we would not emulate in, but I'm not going to talk about that. You know, I was recently, I guess my thought in this is not necessarily that I think we need to just, you know, y'all need to have more people over, you know, y'all need to just be busier, you know, I don't necessarily think that. I want to give a little bit more detail of how to be hospitable. For example, I was just in another community, and a hospitable community, they're very nice. I went to two homes while I was there. One home I sat inside, and the wife and daughter were bustling in the kitchen, doing various things, and I talked, and I was, you know, I was thirsty, and I was there for maybe half an hour talking about different things with the man, just visiting, and he didn't offer me one thing, and I don't think it was he was trying to shun me or anything like that. I think he just didn't come to his mind. It just, you know, he's just enjoying the conversation and didn't really think, you know, to offer something. It's just not really common. If I would have asked, if I would have asked for a meal, I'd say they would have whipped something up real fast. But I think there's a lack there. There's just a disconnect between what his duty really is towards a guest and what it really should be. And I think sometimes we put too much on culture sometimes, in the sense that we say that's their culture, this is our culture. And I know, yeah, there's differences in culture, but, you know, back when my grandmother was young, she said, now this is Alabama, maybe it's different, but she said they always had a coffee kettle on the stove ready, because you never knew when somebody was going to drop in. And as soon as they come in, you'd put that on, go visit with them a little bit, and then when they would be ready, you'd pour it and you'd drink coffee together. And that was just, she said that was just the way things were. Now, you know, we just don't think down those lines. We don't think down those lines. So if we do it, it's kind of a big deal, because we have to get everything ready all of a sudden, and we're not used to it. Some of you do very good. Some of you do very good. Okay. But I just, if I can say one more example to that, it's kind of like, let's say, you know, I just believe in modesty. You know, I'm not really hung up on details, you know, worried about this. And, you know, so you talk with somebody and they're like, you know, colors, you know, this is, you know, got to be careful. Some colors are brighter, some colors are this. I'm not hung up on that. I'm just concerned if it's modest or not. And then later on they say, you know, well, you know, if you wear prints, you know, you got to be careful that the print doesn't clash and that doesn't. Well, you know, I'm not so worried about it. I'm just concerned if it's modest. And then, you know, you talk about the gathers around, and, you know, whether gathers or pleats or none, or how all that is. Well, I'm not concerned about that. I'm just concerned about modesty. And then, you know, double layered or not. And, you know, I'm not concerned about that. I'm just concerned about modesty. And, you know, sleeves, you know, I'm not concerned about, you know, where they should be, you know, just as long as it's modest. And at the end of the day, what do you have? You don't know. You know, there's no defining factors to what you think is modest or not. It's just this vague idea that you don't actually realize that it's, you know, you don't really have any ideas, and it's eventually it's going to be immodest. You're not even going to realize it. So the point that I'm making is we can be that way with hospitality. You know, we can kind of think, you know, we just need to be hospitable. You know, don't worry about certain details or patterns or forms or way of doing things. Just be hospitable. Well, the reality is there's patterns to it. There's ways to do it that is a blessing. There's ways to do it that is not a blessing. It kind of creates confusion or kind of makes it difficult, both for the one being hospitable, the house owner, and for the guest. So some of the things I'm going to share are not, thus saith the Lord, this is the way you got to do it. But I just want to lay out some ways that we've learned, and I might give some, and I plan to give some application that could be very applicable for here. I thought to maybe just draw a house structure there, typically, just to give a little bit of idea. Let's say this is the door. And here you got a, say like this, you got an entry. You got a door here to a room. Well, that's pretty big. We'll just go ahead and make it big then. Got bathroom. It's typically not quite that big. Yeah, maybe that's disproportional. Okay. There you go. Okay. Got a room here. Let's say the kitchen here. This is how the home was set up that we stayed the night in. Okay, so you have room, room, room. That's how they stay their house. We have three rooms. This is the entry. This is the kitchen. And then, you know, bathroom there. Now let's say this is the sitting room. You kind of make whatever room you want to be the sitting room. The rooms are kind of all the same somewhat. And depending on where the sun goes, they might make one for the winter, one for the summer, switch it around. Different things. Okay. I might use that for examples off and on. Now I know our houses are different, but I'm just to give some definition. Okay, let's go to Hebrews chapter 13. One thing I think that we need to see, this aspect of hospitality is not just an option. It's not just something for the Anabaptist people. It's something that is scriptural. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 2 says, "Be not forgetful to entertain strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." This word, entertain strangers, is just pretty much hospitality. Be hospitable is what the word is. I'm assuming that entertain strangers was probably kind of an old way of saying be hospitable. Because of it being lost in our day, I'd say that's one of the reasons we don't really have a cliche word, maybe. But if you look those two words up, entertain strangers are one word in the Greek and it means hospitable. And I think the reason why I use the word strangers, it's implying to entertain, and as we know, entertain does not mean like amuse like we have in our day, but entertain means serve them, draw their attention, spend time with them, care for them. That is entertain. And then strangers would be those outside of your home, outside of your common living. So when it says strangers, it's not necessarily talking about people that you never met before. It's actually talking about, I think that very well can apply, but it's just talking about those outside of your household, your immediate household. And it says, be not forgetful. You know, in the Turkish Bible, it would say, let us not stay behind in loving stay-ins. This is the way it says it. Let us not stay behind in loving stay-ins. And, you know, be not forgetful. This means, don't let us stay behind. Let's stay on top of it. Let's not forget this one. Let's not let this slip our minds. Let's stay on top of it. It says, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. And I think he's putting a little bit of fear factor here. Look, you need to stay on top of this because you might actually be entertaining an angel. And if you entertain an angel and you do, I mean, if you lack in entertaining an angel in a blessed way, woe unto you. Some have entertained angels unawares. And he's trying to get them to, oh, I need to take this serious. That's what I think he's aiming towards there. The importance, I think we need to just stamp this in our minds. This is scriptural. This is not just a good thing. I mean, I think everybody acknowledges this is good to be hospitable. We love it. But It's scriptural. It's something we need to exercise ourselves in. You know, it says there that the qualifications of a bishop and one of the qualifications for a widow being taken into the number was that they have been hospitable. It says that he might be given to hospitality for a bishop, and it says she hath lodged strangers is one of the qualifications for a widow. And also says she has washed the saint's feet. That might also be an implication of her hospitality or her service or servanthood. But it says that she hath lodged strangers being one of the qualifications. Meaning if she just didn't do that, well, maybe that was, she wasn't able to be taken in. I think the reason why that was is this is one of the foundational good works of a Christian. This is not pie-in-the-sky Christianity. This is one of the basic foundational aspects of loving your neighbor as yourself, is being hospitable and using your home not for selfish purposes to guard ourselves from the world, but rather to use it to be a blessing to others. You know, I know that people have different situations. Some are have health issues. You know, there's different difficulties to overcome. So if those are the case, don't feel condemned. But just try to be open to God and allow, you know, what can we do to be a blessing in this area? But don't feel like you need to overextend yourself. And one thing I want to acknowledge too, I recognize that there's different classifications of hospitality. You know, when you have somebody over for the first time, and it's very much this way in Turkey, if you have somebody over for the first time, or somebody that's, or you have like a special event for some reason, you know, kind of like maybe Thanksgiving or something, you know, there's going to be a different level of hospitality than you'll have if you have just, you know, maybe a brother or sister from the church, or especially if you have like a relative or somebody very close, your brother or sister. You know, there's going to be differences, you know, in certain aspects of hospitality. And I just want to acknowledge that some of the things that I'm going to say are an ideal for hospitality, but may not always be practical depending on who comes, you know. And for example, the thing of always bringing them something rather than them getting something. You know, sometimes Brother Claire there in Turkey, typically we would always still make tea for him, bring it to him. We'd have time. But, you know, but if he went to the kitchen, got water, it wasn't a big deal because we were together all the time, you know. So it's mi casa, su casa, you know, there's some of those things. But at the same time, when we have people that have never came or barely came to our home, and then we just say, make yourself at home, as though they're going to go get everything and do everything that their hearts desire, I think it's not realistic. We need to recognize they're our guests. We need to take care of them. We need to bless them. We need to look after them. We don't need to just sit back and say, hey, you know, mi casa, su casa. You know, my house is your home. No, we need to think, what are the things that they need? So, all right, why don't we go to Genesis chapter 18. He said, entertain angels unawares. Who is he talking about? Who do we think?
Abraham.
Abraham, or it could have been Lot. Could have been both of them. But, yep, I'm thinking of Abraham. Chapter 19 has lots, but Abraham, I think this is a good pattern of hospitality right here. Okay, Genesis chapter 18. We'll start in verse 1 and I'll read through verse 8. And the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre and sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him. And he saw, and when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground and said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. And I will fetch a morsel of bread, and comfort your heart, and comfort ye your hearts. After that, ye shall pass on. For, For therefore ye come to your servant. And they said, Do as thou hast said. And Abraham hastened into the tent unto Sarah and said, Make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abraham ran unto the herd and fetched the calf, tender and good, and gave it unto the young man, and he hasted to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which he had dressed, and set it before them, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. So here we see a pattern. And it's very similar to the pattern that is still followed in the Middle East today. Now, of course, there's many more details that could be expounded on of the way they might do things, but this is a very similar pattern. And I think it's a good general pattern overall. Okay, so it says that it was in the heat of the day. He lifted up his eyes and he saw 3 men. You know, and I imagine for Abraham getting guests, he was out in the wilderness or out in the mountain, or, you know, he wasn't in the city, so I imagine a guest was a big deal. So he saw these men and he ran, bowed before them, and pled with them to come. Now, I know some people might think the forcefulness of Middle Eastern people is very repulsing and not very hospitable. Okay, so you know, maybe we can have a little bit of tempering with that, but yet the concept of showing that you want them to come, insisting they come, you know, not being like, you know, hey, if y'all, you know, there's no pressure at all, but if y'all want to come, you know, no pressure at all, but, you know, if you want to come, hey, it doesn't matter to me, but if you want to come tonight, you know, it doesn't matter to me. Try to remove all pressure to make sure that it's strictly what they want. Well, in the Middle East, that would be viewed, they're definitely not going to say yes, because they're going to think, well, you probably don't want me to come. And I think it's good, yeah, to maybe say, look, if you're busy, that's fine, but I really want you to come tonight. To make it clear, you want them to come. It would be a blessing to me if you came to my home. I think that is very important in hospitality, in being hospitable. One of the things in inviting, now people have done this to me, it's not like I'm offended or anything like that, but one of the things I thought to talk about was maybe a healthy way of using technology in light of good relationships that they did. One of the things they would do many times, if they wanted to invite you over to a meal, if they did not know you the best, but, you know, they had met you, maybe we visited and helped them, they want to invite us over, they would try to figure out where we live. They'd ask around and figure out where we live, come visit us, come to our home, have tea with us, and while they're having tea, they would invite us over. They would do that. That was kind of probably the traditional way of inviting. But if not, they would at least call and communicate with us by voice. They would not text. I was thinking back. I don't know, except people that I knew very well, I don't remember ever getting an invite by text. They always would ask and communicate it to let you, they want to talk with you about this. And, you know, and then maybe you would give dialogue. Yeah, well, let me check with my family. That sounds good. Let me check with my family. We'll try to make that happen. And we'll let you know by tonight, and you talk and you'd agree. Okay, I'm not, like I say, I know it's very common our days to text and do that, but I think it's good to have that personal touch. You know, if you're going to see them a little later, wait till the time that you see them and then invite them. You know, think about that. You know, a personal invite. Be personal about it. I think it's a blessing. I found that very much a blessing. You know, when you get used to it, you're used to it. But when I came back, I noticed that. You know, people would just kind of text you, hey, you want to come over tonight? You know, and it was, yeah, and it's nice. Thank you for the invites. I'm not say anything's wrong. I'm very blessed with the invites. But what I'm saying is, you see Abraham's careful, respectful way of approaching them to invite them. He wasn't just casual about this. He wanted to invite them to be his guests. He wanted them to know it's serious to him. He bowed himself before them, said, "Please come be my guest." That's what I'm trying to hit at, is the casualness of just, I'm busy. Okay, all right, it's good. Now I get back to my work and do what I got to do. No, take time. It's important. You're asking them to be your guest. Now, like I said, I know there's a difference between if we invite Peter Marie or invite some of you that we don't know very well. Peter Marie is my wife's, Marie's my wife's sister. We know them very well. I understand there's some differences there in how well you know somebody and some of that. So, but at the same time, as an ideal, I think it's good that we maintain a respectful, courteous way of communication when we invite people. And when you do that, it communicates to them that you want them to come. It's not like just a duty, We got to invite everybody a week, because the Bible says don't stay behind and, be not forgetful to entertain strangers, so we got to do that. We got preached about. But it's communicating that this is important to us. We really want you to come and be our guest. And I think that's one of the things that we need to get out of our mind, that guests are a bother, that hospitality is a bother. We do this, but we need to get on with real life. We need to, yes, we can't spend our whole life being hospitable. We have to work. We have to do other things. We have children to train. We have schooling to get done. We have many things. But yet, this is an important aspect of the Christian life. Okay, so there Abraham went and met them at the door, bowed himself to the ground, invited them in a respectful, reverent manner. And he pled with him. I think it's good to put a little bit of pressure. I don't think we need to just think that it's respectful, just remove all, not that you want to just make them feel guilty if they don't come. Okay, that's not good. But at the same time, I think it's good that we show them, look, I really want you to come. It would really be a blessing. Okay. Then he said, "Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet. Rest yourselves under the tree." He was thinking about their state. Sometimes when we have guests, we need to think, what have they done today? If they've been on the road all day, they might be tired. Maybe they might be thirsty. We need to think about their state. Maybe they come in, they're sweaty. You want to come to the sink here and wash your face a little bit, wash up. They're in Turkey, they were very noticing of your state. If there was something that you had, they were ready to give you a change of clothes. They'll wash your clothes real quick. That's just how they were. They were very, I'm not saying we need to do that. I don't know how that is, but I'm just saying that's how it was. They were very noticing of your state. And even if they didn't notice anything, they were already quick to give you something to drink, to do all that. They're very noticing. And I think that's very important. I think it's good when guests come. One thing I think I don't think for many of us we have to run down to the spring, down the bottom, and, fill up a bucket and run it up. And, we only have so much water and we're kind of sparing with it. I don't think that's most of our situations. So a good glass of water, sit them down when they come in. Show them where to sit. Say, Abraham here, we'll see in a little bit. He showed them where to sit under the tree. I think it's good to not be forceful. Maybe just say, hey, right here's a nice place. There's a nice, comfortable chair. I think it's good to just maybe guide them a little bit, especially if they're new, because they've never been here before. Instead of just make yourself at home, they're kind of like, where do I sit? What do I do? Okay, I guess plop down here. And sometimes, if you don't guide them, it can kind of create some awkwardness later, because you have genders, you have different aspects, and maybe it's good to put some thought in who's coming. I'll talk about that in a little bit, but one of the things I think is just always, when they come in, without asking, my suggestion, just get them a cup of water, set it beside them. If they want to drink it, that's up to them. If they don't, that's up to them. But they have a cup of water. It's there. I think that's, and that's something I think that the men can do while the wives are busy in the kitchen. But I think that is something that is very good. Now, of course, in Turkey, when you first come in, they send somebody for, they have a picture, they have a pitcher, they fill it up, hand it to you, you drink it. Whenever you're done, you hand it back. They fill it up for the next one, you drink it, then you hand it back, and then, that's kind of how it is there. So, I don't think many people might appreciate that style here. So, but seriously, just coming, putting a cup of water right there can really just, because people get thirsty. You have to think, maybe these people drove 30 minutes, from their home. Before that, they might not have drank for 30 minutes. After an hour, hour and a half of not drinking, you get thirsty. That's how life is. And it should be a shame to us in our heart. We should feel ashamed if they ask for water and we realize, they've been sitting there thirsty. Oh, no. That should be like, that should be ashamed of us. See, that's how it is there. It's a shame. If the guests have to ask for something, they are flying to the kitchen to get it. Oh, it's just so shame. The guests had to ask for something. I can't believe it. Okay. So trying to be, in a way, a little forward. So here, okay, let's go back to the scripture. He considered the journey they had been on. And then it says here in verse 5, "And I will fetch a morsel of bread and comfort ye your hearts. After that ye shall pass on, and therefore ye come to your servant." And they said, "So do as thou hast said." And just think, people are on a journey. It's a blessing to comfort their hearts, give them something that they can be refreshed as you visit. Then in verse 6, and Abraham, hold on. I want to go to verse 8 real quick where it says, okay, yeah, by the tree. It says he stood them by the tree. Okay, he stood by them on the tree. But at first he said, come and sit by the tree. I want to go back to the idea of showing them a place to sit, kind of guiding them a little bit. What I feel because of the American society, and we don't want to be pushy, and we don't want to do that, whenever people come to our home, we just kind of want to let them decide what they want to do. And we want them to do that, but not fully. There's definitely limits to that. And many times the reality is when people come in, they don't know what to expect. They don't know what you want. Where to go, especially if you have people that aren't used to being in homes. Sometimes we have people among us. There, we'd come in, they'd be standing here. We'd come in, drop our shoes right here. And yeah, then also if you don't want shoes in your home, just let them know. Hey, you can put your shoes right here if you don't want that. If you don't mind it, then come on in. You can say, keep your shoes on, that's fine, come on in. You drop your shoes off right here, you come in, you greet people. If it's ladies, you greet them the proper way. If it's men, you greet them the proper way. And you come in, then they kind of guide you, sit you down. Typically, the men will kind of be seated over in this direction. This is the head seat right here, the corner. They'll kind of sit you around here. The women many times will be sitting around here because the kitchen's across the way and the women will be in the kitchen, so they don't want the men looking all the time up in the kitchen. And so they kind of have a pattern that they think about how it should be, So y'all chuckle, but that's the way it is. They got this thing down to science. And, the men over here, this is the head corner, so you want a man over there in the head corner. It's the furthest from the door. They can see everything. They're the furthest from where people are going to be going in and out serving. The servants, the host of the home, always sit over here, within this area. That's where they always sit. And the reason is, they're going in and out to the kitchen to bring tea, to bring snacks, to bring the food, whatever. They don't want to be having to walk across people, and it would be kind of disrespectful to sit your guests there because they're in the place that servants should be, so it's not the most respectful. Now, we don't have a lot of those patterns. Maybe they did years ago. I don't know. In European culture, But you know, but I'm just saying they have a way of doing things there. And when I came back, I was used to that. You know, I got really used to that. When I came back, it's kind of like, hey, sit where you want. And I kind of don't know, you know, what's normal, what's expected here, you know. So, you know, I think it's good, and I've noticed that with other people. If I do that, they'll kind of hesitate, look around a little bit. And I just found it helps just to gently guide them, you know, sit right here. And Abraham knew that tent's a comfortable place. It's a hot day. Under that tent, there's shade. I mean, that tree is a comfortable place. There's shade under there. We made a nice place there. We sit there. He knew that that's a good place. He guided them to that tree and set them there. And I think it's good to, you know, to guide them there. And then maybe ask, is that okay? Is this okay? You know, because maybe they have some reason they don't like that. Maybe they have a back problem. Maybe. So, and then like I said, bring a water to them. And make sure they have a place to sit their water. You know, there in Turkey, we either sit on the floor, or if we sit on couches, they have these things called sepa, which are little tables, little nesting tables, that one goes in, you know, into the other. If you came to my house, you've seen the ones that I made. And you can pull those out. They're not like, you don't have bulky furniture everywhere. They're just little things. You pull out, you can set one here, set one over there. And then people have a place to put their drinks. You know, I came into some homes and, you know, they don't have anywhere to put your drink. You know, you're there and you got a drink. You just got the arm of a couch here that, you know, if you put it there, it'll fall over and there's no table around. And so I guess you just put it down by your feet, down on the ground. And it's kind of, you know, it's down on the ground by your feet and, you know, it's dirty down there. And, you know, it's just, no, but, you know, so, you know, if you sit on the floor and everybody's take their shoes off and all that, it's a little different. But, so, I think it's good for us to consider, do they have somewhere to put their drink? You know, maybe y'all think about that. But I think sometimes, I think many homes, it just hit me. We don't think about that. We bring something, they just kind of put it on their knee, you know, just kind of hold it there the whole time. But it's good that they have a comfortable place to put their drink. And then, I really promote the sepa, that style. If you want to know what I'm talking about, you can come and ask me, and I'll draw you a little picture of it or have you over and show it. It's really nice, practical little tables that are compact. You don't have a big bulky room. They're everywhere, and they're very practical. Okay, so here we see Abraham. Let's go back to the scripture now. And then he goes. So after he set them in a nice place and got them comfortable with some water, they could wash their feet and be comfortable. He then went into his wife, Sarah, and said, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal. You know, and one thing I see here, Abraham is leading out in it. I think that's one thing. Okay, one sense we could say, well, Abraham, he's asking a lot of his wife. You know, that's not good. Well, but he is leading out in it. I think it is important to consider our wives, what's their load at the time. But at the same time, many times men, we go, we're busy, we're working, you know, and then we got guests coming home. We, you know, we're trying to get this done, and then we zoom home, and then, you know, the guests are coming at 5:30, and then we go take a shower real quick and get dressed. And then as we come out, they're coming in the door, and then, you know, we haven't even thought about the guests coming tonight because we've been working and we're busy. But I think it's good that us men also put a little thought into it. You know, maybe talk with the wives. Now, who's coming? How many people? How are we going to sit? What are we going to do things? You know, just talk a little bit. You know, and then, you know, is there anything you need me to get for it as I come home? And, you know, those kinds of things are important. You know, and also as the guests come in, you know, we see Abraham's the one that is inviting. He's meeting them at the door. I think it's important that the man leads out in these aspects, making the guests feel comfortable. Guiding them to a place to sit. And instead of just kind of, I'm the man, hospitality is the lady's thing, she does all the cooking, everything, you know, I sit back and relax, you know. And I would say in the culture there in Turkey, men are too much that way when it comes down to the actual working of things, you know, doing things that actually help. But as far as hospitality, they are very good in guiding the guests in, showing them where to sit, entertaining them. They do very good. But, yeah, many of them don't lift much of a finger in the kitchen or something, you know. So maybe there's some ways that it could be a help. But you see that Sarah was ready. Sarah was willing. She didn't get overwhelmed by this. It was, okay, let's do it. We got guests. This is important. She considered the guests important too. I think that there needs to be a predetermined desire within both of the couple that we are going to value guests together. I think that's very important. They both do that. And like I say, it's good that a husband consider the needs of his wife and, you know, try to be sensitive to those things. You know, the other night, a few weeks ago, we had Micah's over, and it was kind of late in the day. I had spent some time that morning with the children. I thought, well, maybe tonight would be a good night. I had some time with the family, and so we called, you know, Micah's, and they wanted to come, and I just let them know, you know, tonight, you know, it was already in the afternoon. We don't really have much time. You know, we're just going to probably have DiGiorno pizzas from the Salvage Foods. You know, we're just going to pop those in the oven and have those. You know, I hope that's fine. And they're like, yeah, that's fine, no problem. So there's times that, you know, you just kind of, in other words, it's good to make your best. It's good to have a good meal for your guests. I'm for that. At the same time, you got to do what you got to do. You know, to be hospitable, you don't have time. Consider your wife. You know, my wife is kind of like, you know, yeah, that'd be good, but what do I do? I don't have time. I said, well, just put those pizzas that we have in the freezer in the oven, and, you know, we'll just do that. And she's like, okay, you know, that's... So it worked out well. We enjoyed the evening. So sometimes it's good to not be overwhelmed and consider your wife. What I'm saying is to consider your wife in these ways. Be willing to just not expect something real big. At the same time, I do want to say this. When you do have time, when it is possible, we see here that he told Sarah to make ready 3 measures of meal, knead it, make cakes upon the hearth that's upon the fire. And then in verse 7, Abraham ran to the herd, fetched a calf, tender and good, and gave it unto the young man, and he hastened to dress. I mean, this calf is money. He got it, cut it, and said, you know, we're gonna treat these people good. At the same time, keep in mind what I said about consider your wife, but when you have the possibility, it's good to consider your guests important. To try to give them a good, balanced, solid meal. To bless them with something that will fill them, that tastes good, that they're going to be glad that they came, that was a blessing. And instead of, you know, forgive me, I don't think anybody's done this, but instead of kind of attitude, you know, we're just going to show them how simple we are. You know, we're just going to really make this thing simple. You know, we're going to make sure we curb this. You know, and I'm not for fancy and big, but, you know, they would many times make pretty amazing meals, but many times it was fairly simple. Rice or bulgur, chicken, salad. But they made 4 times what we could eat. They made a lot. And you want me to tell you why? They did not want any hesitation for us to eat as much as we wanted. They were not just like, you know, we got 12 people, you know, I'll make, you know, 11 and a half, make sure, you know, we get it all taken care of, you know. No, they made plenty. And if they had some left over, you know what they did with it? They went to their neighbors. Here, I got some food here if you want some. You know, we had guests tonight, we got some food left over. That's what they did. And some of it they might eat over, depending on what it is, but much of it they gave away that night. And those were special meals, but they did that very often. I'm not saying you need to make 4 times, but it is good to make plenty. It's good to make plenty. And it's good to make it that the people will enjoy it. And there's ways to do that. So here we see him going to the young man. He's involving the young man. He's involving his house. And, you know, I think about the training of young people in this. Hospitality can be something that we train. We need to train our young people to be hospitable. I remember a home there in Turkey. They had this young man. You know, for some reason, they let their young boys grow these wild hairdos. And, you know, he had this hair coming over his face. And he was, you know, always going like that. The mother and father were very nice. They invited us over a lot. We had meals in their homes. They came, actually, recently, Emily Smith's been having a Bible study with the mother. But I noticed him when he was young. You know, they'd greet us, give us the greeting, but then he'd go play on the phone or do something. But then I remember one day going there. And it's interesting when you're there, not just 1 week, but when you're there over a period of time, you see these things happening. You see how they train. Even though I think they're losing out a lot with technology and some of that, but they're still intentional about training. One day I remember going there, and his hair was cut nicer and all that. He was a little older. And he was maybe 10 years old, and this time he wasn't on the phone. He sat next to his mother, and she'd say, you know, and then she's pouring the tea, and she'd whisper something to him, and he'd take it, you know, take it to me, and then take it to Brother Claire, and then take it to Brother Vernon, and take it to the sisters, and, you know, and he'd go set the tea there. And then as soon as the tea's done, you know, she'd whisper something to him, and he'd come over, grab my tea, and take it over, and she'd refill it. And then she'd be there visiting, and then, you know, she'd be keeping her eyes on the glasses, you know, are they filled. And, you know, she was training him. There wasn't a bucking against it. There wasn't him running off, playing immediately. She had a duty. She told him, you stay by me. I'm going to train you how to do this. And I think it's important that we bring our children into hospitality. We teach them, go get a glass of, you know, go get a glass of water for, you know, for Brother Aaron. You know, go do this. And they need to accept that as a part of their duty. They're a part of this too. We work at this as a family. And I think many times when it's only on the mother, It's heavy. It's big. It's a lot. But when the whole family can be involved in it, it can be much more of a blessing. And of course, also, like was said, Brother Simeon mentioned it also, the children can do very well at intentionally being hospitable to the other children, showing them toys, showing them a book to look at, not just kind of selfishly running off and being wild, but an intentional way of being hospitable in a way that is profitable to the whole environment. A lot of these things come with training behind the scenes and then carrying it out whenever you have guests and guiding them on how to do it. You know, I tend to have the ideal that children can play quietly enough that adults can comfortably visit and hear each other. I think children need to learn to be mindful of adults. They need to be mindful of big people. They don't need to just be selfish and doing their own things. There's needs with that. We have needs with that. We're endeavoring to train, but that is an aim that we have. If we have lacks, you can talk to me about it, but we're trying to work on it. Also, toys. I think we need to aim when toys are done. Let's say, you know, the other night, for example, we had Brother Benny's over, had a puzzle out. When that puzzle was done, you know, put it up. You know, because it can be there. People are trying to go to the bathroom. It's in the way. You know, put it up. You know, it's time to put it up. And then they can, you know, play whatever else they were playing or do whatever else they're doing. You know, I'm not necessarily for just children sitting in a row not doing anything. At the same time, there needs to be a productive, mannerly way that they can play and be there. Whether they're allowed to go to another place or not, they need to learn to do that. But a place that is not disruptive to the adults. And I think it's good that parents be alert to what's going on with their children. And to, there's a lot that could be said with that, but that's just what I want to say. But I think it's also as the children get older, consider them a part of the hospitality. And one thing I think with that too, maybe helping wash the dishes after. Have the children, you know, help them wash the dishes after. Help them put things up. You know, whenever the guests are done, get the guests to go sit down. Get your children to go gather the plates together and go put them up. Those kinds of things. The guests are to be served. Now let's look at that. I want to show this. It says in verse 8, after they dressed it, he took butter and milk and the calf, and he dressed and set it before them, and they stood, and he stood by them under the tree, and they did eat. You know, he set it before them. Now, of course, he stood by and did eat, and many are still like that in the Middle East. Some will eat with you a little bit to make you feel a little bit comfortable, but many won't eat. They'll let you eat. They serve you. They're washing your drinks. If your drinks are low, they fill them. If, you know, if you're being shy towards some of the food, they'll dump it on your plate, you know, and so, you know, you may not need to do all that, but they're serving, and I want to present them here. It's not, there's a place for it. We do it. I'm not saying, I'm not trying to make a strong statement by this, but have we lost the principle by neglecting ever sitting around the table? You know, I was thinking about that when I came back, and we have cafeteria style, and everybody gets up. You know, there in Turkey, you sit down, and they bring the food to you. Bam! I mean, it's there. You don't lift a finger. Everything is within your reach that you want to eat. And, you know, sometimes you have too big of a crowd. You can't all sit around the table. You know, I understand that. I'm not saying there's not a time, but let's say it's like our family, not a real big family, and then, another small family. You know, if possible, you know, with our house, with our table situation, you know, we can't quite do that. But, you know, if possible, to be able to sit together in one place, visit, have the food before them, have it passed before them. You know, are our children learning just the basic things of passing? You know, you get it, you pass it to the left. You go, you know, those kind of things. Do they know that? You know, I was taught, I grew up, we didn't put our elbows on the table. We put our hands like this. You know, there were various things that I just thought about. Are we losing out on, you know, on some of those principles, on the concept of serving our guests? Now, I know maybe some of the settings you come from, they're not used to in the middle of the week having guests much. When they have guests, it's a big deal. They set up, they prepare a lot of food. So I understand that in some ways we can't always do that. But I just want to maybe give a little consideration. Are we missing a principle of, you know, with the paper plates and plastic spoons and the cafeteria style, that we're losing the willingness to serve our guests and to bless them? We want to give our best to them. And I'm not saying everything's fine china, everything's fancy, but just a blessed meal that we serve them and bless them, and we want to show them that we value them. So, I'm not saying there's not a place for the paper plates and all that. So don't get me wrong. And if you've done that to me, I have no problem. You know, I think it is good to consider if you need to cut something, it might be best to not have paper plates. You know, just because sometimes you know you're sitting, you're holding it, you're sitting on the couch trying to cut it, and you know it, the plates moving around, and you know some of those things. So it can have some difficulties. Many of you have done that. Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just giving some ideas. These are things that I noticed when I came back. Things kind of shifted. It's not a big deal. I'm very thankful for all the hospitality that you give. But there, I'll just say there, that would never enter their mind. I'll just say that for what it's worth. That would never enter their mind. They consider the sacrifice of hospitality a blessing. They want to give that sacrifice. And I know the thought of not wanting to wash the dishes at night when your company's sitting there. I understand some of those things. Maybe they could wait. Maybe, like I said, you can, you know, get a few little girls that are there to do it, you know, and then the mother can visit. Maybe those possibilities can happen. There might be ways that it can happen that all things can work together. So I'm not making a real strong statement there. Just please try to understand what I'm saying. So Lord bless you as you endeavor to do that. I want to say something real quick now. One thing I want to say about the table. You know, one of the things I've kind of always resisted getting a real big oak table, you know, something real expensive. And, you know, I just never, been real big with that. I understand the value of that. The leaves, you put them in, it's solid. You know, you can, you know, put it out real far. But, you know, one question, but one thing, we were just up at Lyle Bowman's house, or Bowman, whatever his name, up in close to Dayton area for the Dayton meetings. And he had a long table. He's German Baptist. And he said, you know, I know y'all do cafeteria style and charity, you know, but we sit around the table. And he talked about that. And we sat there, and I think I dropped something. I looked up, and this big table, I noticed it was MDF board. So I asked him about that, and he said, oh, yeah. He just made do. He had this nice big table, and he had leaves he could put in, and he just put latches underneath that just, you know, lock in there. And he just made it himself and spent maybe $100 in total, $200, I don't know. And if you put a tablecloth on that, nobody knows. It's a big oak table, according to them. And if you really want the look, you know, you can maybe get like that much of an oak, you know, leg down at the bottom and make it look oak, you know, at the bottom, you know. But, you know, some people may get an oak table, the traditional type, and they plan for it to last a long time in their home. That's fine if you want to do that. But if you're like me, you have a difficulty spending that much money on a table like that, that would be a good option. Try to find options. There's ways to do it that we don't have to be high-end. Another thing, a big question, is always room in the home. Okay, now, I know I've maybe said some radical things about room and how to utilize room. So, I want to be careful to some of that. But one thing I will say is, one thing, we don't have to always invite a big crowd. If I don't have enough room, I don't have to always invite five families at a time. I invite one or two. Okay, that's one thing. Another thing, typically, for example, this home, they had, you know, these were bedrooms / sitting rooms. They always had them available to where another room in a Turkish Syrian home was always available for sitting, if that's what it took. If there was more guests that came, they always had another room. And I think many times we think we have to have a real big living room because everything has to happen in the living room. Well, you know, the old timers, it wasn't a big deal for the men to go one room and the ladies to be up there close to the kitchen in another room. You know that, and I think that should be an option for us. I don't think we have to feel like we always have to have a big house with many rooms and a lot of room and all this. You know, maybe one room could just be intentionally set. Okay, this is where somebody can sleep. At the same time, it can easily be transferred. You know, we have a futon, you know, in there, or a hideaway couch. You can easily turn into a sitting room if that's what it takes. Or, you know, basements. Many of us have very nice basements that could easily be finished out. A lot of people could sit in there. We have all kinds of room. And I would just say if we would go to, I was thinking about the world. I think almost anywhere in the world, if we would go to and say, yeah, we want to have more guests, but we struggle with the amount of room, they would not be able to understand us one bit. They would, what are you talking about? And so I think we're not honest with how we use our space many times. And I just want to give a little word, not as a burden, but as a blessing. Oh, good. I don't have to try to get a big, oh yeah, I can utilize this space. Instead of thinking, So, Lord bless you in that. One thing I want to say real quick, respect for elders. I feel like that was something I was just really touched there. You know, we know in the Old Testament it teaches when elders come into the room to rise up before them, rise before the hoary head. Do those kind of principles still apply? Should we operate in those? When I was growing up, I was taught never greet an older person sitting down. And if an older person comes in sitting down and you're sitting in a soft chair, you get up, stand next to your chair, and see where he sits. When he sits down, after he sits down, then you can sit down. And my mother said when she was growing up, she would have been taught if they're playing, whatever they're doing, older person comes up, you know, comes in, they're supposed to stand up. That's what they would have been taught in Alabama. I was taught that's a good ideal, but, you know, it's kind of hard in our day to do that. I mean, she didn't say it that way, but that's kind of, I was taught that was a good ideal, but we never actually did that. You know, let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 5 in the New Testament. I think in our day, we need to consider this. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 1, it says, "Rebuke not an elder, but entreat him as a father, and the younger as brethren." You know, it's said to rebuke not an elder. In other places, you see that Timothy was exhorted to correct, rebuke. He had a place that he could do that. He could, if something was amiss, something was out of order, Timothy had the authority to get it back in order and to address it, no questions asked. But here, to an elder, he was to entreat him as a father. Now, what is our mentality towards a father? See, that's one thing. When our way of relating towards a father gets messed up, then we don't understand what this means. And there, I remember one time talking to a young man, and I was asking him, you know, I was trying to, you know, I was discipling him, having Bible studies with him, and I told him, I said, you know, the Bible says to honor your father and mother. They may not agree with the path that you're on, but you still need to honor them. You know, sometimes you may be at school, you may hear your friends talking about their parents and say negative things. You know, you don't need to take heed to that or do any of that. And he looked at me blankly, and he didn't know what I was talking about. He couldn't believe it. He goes to public school in a bad neighborhood. He couldn't believe anybody would talk about their father and mother. That was just so far beyond his mindset. And there's a lot of stories I can give about this. There's rebellion happening in this generation there, but there is still a large level of respect. And to openly come against your father, no way. No way. I mean, I remember one time talking back to my stepfather growing up. I might have did it more. I was thinking seriously, how much did I do it? I remember one time saying something back, and I said it back fairly sheepishly. And he hopped up out of his recliner in one moment, and he said something that was not very nice to me. But there was no toleration for talking back. And, you know, I just think about that. When authority says something, when it's the final decision, when they give room to talk and dialogue, that's one thing. But when the final decision is there, that was it. And that's how it is there. But Timothy, because he has a responsibility, if an elder did something wrong, he was not to just quickly correct him. He was to come at him carefully. Think of Elihu in the Old Testament. He came whenever he spoke to the elder. He said he waited. If you read that, and he says the reason why he waited, and the reason, he said, because you are aged and I am younger. And, you know, and I feel like in ways I've drawn back from that. I remember one time my father-in-law corrected me there in North Carolina when I commented on something in the sharing time afterwards. And it was really too strong for something that I said that was in response to something that an older brother had said. And he just told me, he just said, you're younger. And I thought about that, and I've thought about it a lot since. It's good to have some confidence, to be bold, but at the same time, we need to consider that as a factor. With this, look at one last scripture in 1 Timothy chapter 5. One thing I'll say on this, let's say we're sitting here talking, and then an elder comes in, a gray-headed man. You know what happens there? Everybody gets up. You're sitting on the floor, you stand up, and you sit back. He may, and many times he'll be like, sit down, sit down, sit down. But if you do it, it'll be like, you know, real shameful. But he'll come around, greet the men, and then the host will guide him and make sure he sits right here in the corner. And he may try to resist it, but they'll, you know, try to push him there in the corner. And whatever I was talking about is forgotten. Now the attention's on him. The older man came. We wait for him. What is he going to say? What is he going to do? And then if he, let's say he just sits there and doesn't want to talk about much, then maybe we can resume back to our conversation. But we wait for him. If he brings up a topic, he shows interest in you, talks to you, then you show interest in him. And whatever you were talking about, left for another time. You know, you talk about another time. And that is the respect that's given. And that's just common. That's just how it was. Okay, here in 1 Timothy chapter 5, this is a principle that I thought goes back into Anabaptist times, or in the Anabaptist people. It says here in verse 4, but if any widow have children or nephews, let them learn first to show piety at home and to requite their parents, for that is good and acceptable before God. So here we see that children were to first show piety at home. And what does this word requite mean? It says, and to requite their parents. Does anyone know that word requite? To repay. In Turkish, I thought it was funny because it said, let them learn the debt that they have to the big people or to the elders. They need to first show godliness at home and learn the debt that they have to the big people. Learn to pay the debt that they have to the big people is what it says. You know, and I've thought about the principle of children working for their parents and to the older. And of course, when the parents are older, taking care of them. That is not just a good principle that's good for social, you know, for a society. It is good for a society, but it is what it's according to the apostles' doctrine here. And he's saying by requite, repay, that the child has a debt to the parents. And that is a very big principle you would hear regularly. They would visit their parents regularly. I mean, daily, depending on the situation, they would call them regularly. They would spend time making sure everything is taken care of by them. It was their responsibility. Because they were 9 months in their parents' womb, they took care of them when they were a child, they have a debt to them. And you know, I kind of thought that sounds kind of bad to say you have a debt. You know, shouldn't it be out of honor, shouldn't it be out of this, but that's actually the mentality that's here, that we need to recognize that. And for some of us, it's difficult to know what to do with all these details when your parents are not in the place that you are, but yet we need to endeavor to wrestle with these principles and try to apply them to our lives. And so God bless you. Lord bless you. And I think with this, to guide our young people in these principles are huge. It can have a big effect on where we come out at. God bless you as you do that.